Blog Talk Radio.
I stroll through the pictures, what I've left behind. You once again. I'm locked up in memories, they all intertwine. The memories in my mind. I know tomorrow, 'cause that dawn will come. You will never know just what you have done.
Good evening, everyone. If I sound a little funny right now, please forgive me. I'll find out when I actually get on air with my co-hosts and our special guests and our panel. I'm using a different device tonight to come to you, and hopefully it's going to be a little clearer. Let me turn off some background noise. Anyway, you have reached the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show brought to you by NASCA, the National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Charlie Stecker, and I am going to be your host this evening for what is Wednesday night's, Wednesday night's special guest show night. And do we have a special guest for you tonight? We sure do. She is actually has been on the show before, a longtime friend of mine, and we are anticipating her call in at any moment. That being said, let me do some preliminary homework here. I want to share with you what our mission here at NASCA is, okay? So NASCA holds a single purpose. It's to address the issues related to childhood abuse and trauma that includes sexual assault, violent or physical abuse, emotional traumas, and neglect. And we do it with these two goals in mind. The first being educating the public, especially as related to helping society get over its taboo of discussing childhood sexual abuse, otherwise sometimes you hear it as CSA, presenting facts showing child abuse to be a pandemic, worldwide problem that affects everyone. And our second goal is to offer hope and healing through numerous paths, providing many services to adult survivors of child abuse, along with information for anyone interested in the many issues involving prevention, intervention, and recovery. I do encourage you, our listeners, both now and into the future, that if you want to check out our website, we'd absolutely love for you to do that. It's NAASCA.org. Please look that up. And we are a 501c3 nonprofit, and we definitely could utilize your blessing of a financial gift if that's something you're able to do. There's no obligation, and by the way, if you want to become a member of NASCA, guess what? Just wanting to become a member gets you in as a member. There is no membership dues. There are no criteria other than those of us who ask that you come along and you be supportive and be part of our family, so we look forward to that. Tonight, again, as I said, is Wednesday night special guest night, and our special guest tonight is someone I've known for quite a few years. We've had interactions periodically. And she's actually also an ambassador for our great state of Illinois. Before I introduce a little bit about her, I do want to remind our call-in number is 646-595-2118. Please call in. Join the panel. What do you do on the panel? Great question. About every 15, 20 minutes, we'll cue up your mic. You have an opportunity to interact with our special guest, share some insights from her story that she shared with you or whatever she shares with you. Maybe you have something in your story that are parallel with hers. That's wonderful. I do ask you, because tonight is about our special guest, it's their show, that if your story parallels with theirs, that's wonderful. But let's not, including myself, allow our own stories to overcome our special guests and what they're going to be sharing with us tonight. Again, one more time, that call number, 646 515-595-2118. I do have Bailey from South Florida as my co-host tonight and is assisting me in the call-in room. So if you hear a silent moment once you call in, you're not sure what's going on, it's probably Bailey coming in to find out who you are so we can put your name up in the queue so I can introduce you officially and formally. All that being said, let me give you a little bit on our special guest tonight. Her name is Patricia McKnight. She prefers to be called Trish. She is from Breeze, Illinois. She's a returning NASCAR family member. What that means, for those who don't know, she's been on the show before. She is 1,000 miles away from the person that her parents had created and forced into slavery and destructive neglect and constant violence, fueled by mental illness and substance abuse. I'm not going to go heavy into the biography because I really want to get Trish on here, but I'm going to tell you, folks, you need to be on here tonight. You need to be calling in 646-595-2118. Some powerful information is going to be talked about tonight. Matter of fact, I got a feeling we're going to be talking about caterpillars because I see butterflies in the distance. All right, let's get Trish on here without any further ado. Good evening and welcome, Trish.
Hello, how are you?
Good, it's been a
can
while.
You hear me?
It's good to hear your voice. I can hear you fine. Can
you hear me? I definitely can. Thank you very much for the intro. And I put my phone on Do Not Disturb. Let me clear this real quick. I apologize to anyone that's listening out there, but I don't want to have that constant buzzing in my ear either. So, 1 second.
Take your time.
Okay, it should be turned on. All right. So, hi, everyone.
There we go.
Yes. Hi, Charles. How are you? And
I am doing wonderful.
And you said Bailey's
on
the phone with us?
Bailey is my co-host tonight. She's in the panel right now.
Oh, cool. Good, good. I was going to log in through my computer, but sometimes I can be technologically challenged, so I just figured I would come sit on the patio with my phone and enjoy the evening and talk with everybody. So glad to be here.
Well, I'm so glad to have you, and I know you've been in this a very long time, as many of us have, and a very long time, meaning our entire lives, right? Especially since we came out of it in our childhood.
And to
what
think
is
how long
to share with
that.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Trish.
Well, I was just going to say, you know, I mean, how long all of us have been speaking out as adult survivors? You, me, Bill, Mary, Michael, I gracious hundreds of us that go years back since Facebook first started, that we all connected and found that we had so much in common. And I think that really kind of sparked it for me. It was after I published my Justice, but I was kind of after writing it all out piece by piece, it kind of set off a bunch of emotions that I had to process through. And being able to get online and do radio and talk to people across the country and around the world who had gone through much the same thing in their little piece of the world, and how all of us had, and how many of us had walked the same types of paths and choices. And I think, you know, I know that as a young parent, people can get overly stressed. And right now during this pandemic, it terrifies me. I was talking with the people today, got a friendship and partnership going with Prevent Child Abuse Illinois, and teaming in with our organization, Butterfly Dreams Alliance, and Hopeful Future Events, and supporting each other and just getting the word out. You know, there's just so many millions, and it's just such a difficult time right now for people, and all as we get stressed out and suffering. You'll look at the history of it and the addictions and the traumas and the patterns, and, you know, it just keeps continuing. And doing shows like this, having the NASCA family there helped me Having all of you online helped me get stronger and become who I am today. And, you know, like I say, 1,000 miles away from the person my parents created. We'll get into my story. I'll let you have a few words first before I continue, so I can take a breath now.
Well, no, it's wonderful to hear your voice, and I remember back then. But we are looking forward to, you know, sharing those. There's many out here who don't know who is Patricia McKnight. Who is Trish McKnight? And there's many out here, but
yeah.
I know you and I have watched each other mature through the years and deal with the different challenges that we are thrust at us in this line of advocacy. People would think this would be an easy road, and boy, we wish it was, right? But
right. Oh my goodness, so, I wish it was that easy. Yeah.
Right.
But my story, it's when we dive into it here. You know, I always take a breath. Being on NASCA, we always get into some really heavy subjects, and there's a lot of survivors on the line. And I don't want to cause any secondary trauma. I don't want to trigger anyone's responses. So take a breath, and I hope that everyone's sitting in a safe place where they're listening and they feel comfortable and know that my voice is being shared in hopes that I can give them something to hang on to and believe in, because when I was going through it, I didn't think I had anything. So if this reaches anyone, I hope it at least does that. Moving forward, my abuse started at 5. It was initiated by my stepfather. Up to that moment, I had some very happy memories. Even though I was a child of divorce, I still had very happy memories. But then when he came into our lives, my mother, who had been affectionate and caring, kind of got swept up and swept away. And the more dominant he became with me more than my siblings, the less connected she became. The sexual abuse started at 5. That was the first time he molested me in front of my brother and two other boys. It was actually the night of my mother's bridal shower. And then 2 weeks later, I'm sitting on a church pew, and I'm hearing my mother say, "I do," and I'm absolutely terrified of this man that she's marrying. He's already put fear of death and fear of being sent away and fear of being rejected by my mother into my head, and making me already keep a secret that I didn't want to keep. And he wasn't cruel to my mother. My mother, I had to learn to accept that in my adult life as I looked back and looked at the experiences of what happened. I don't want to make my mother out to be a victim, because she certainly was not. She was complicit and she was permissive of what he did, and she was very dismissive of what he did. He never hurt her. He never yelled at her. He would have crawled over broken glass for her. He would have done absolutely anything for her. So, and he wasn't always cruel and rude with my siblings, but I became the childhood I always talk about enslavement, because it really was. I was taught to answer the ring of a little brass bell. Whether he needed a glass of tea, whether 5 other people were sitting around him, didn't matter. I needed to be the one to answer that bell. So that bell became my nightmare. It was a bell he rang to call me downstairs in the middle of the night after he'd sent everybody else to bed. And I had to wear a certain nightgown. And he would, it was many, many rapes, and they were very, very violent. One completely silenced me, because I did try to run away from home three different times between the ages of 9 and 12. I tried to run away three different times, and my mother would come get me, and, "Teresa Ann, it's going to be fine, and don't be acting up, and let's just go back home, and he's not going to bother you." But he still kept coming in every time I took a bath, and he still kept coming into my bedroom at night. And, you know, if she was working that night or during the day, I would get called in from playing outside with my brother and sister so that he could, at 9, he was his first attempted rape. And my mother actually walked in early from work and walked in on us in her bedroom. And saw us there in bed naked together, and any mom would have exploded and picked up her child and called the police and gotten him out of the house. And I was pushed off the bed, and I was sent to my bedroom for the night. And then I was called out to clean up the kitchen after dinner, wasn't allowed to eat, and then I was sent back to my bedroom. And I woke up the next day and I went to school, and nobody ever said another word about it. And that's the way that it happened, and it happened and happened and happened. So as I got older, the violence and the control led to his using me, selling me for the price of a glass of draft beer, which was about 50 cents back then. He'd take me to the local bars in town and encourage me on how to stand up and play the jukebox and how to entice and lure in these young men from the coal mine who would buy him drinks, and they would buy me drinks. And at, you know, 12 years old, I'm drinking double shots of vodka with orange juice and can't even stand up straight, and in a public bar. At 13, I'm sitting in the weekend band music at a major dance club that was here with my parents, drinking whiskey and 7-Up while various men come up and take me out on the dance floor and buy us drinks. That's what I was. I was a commodity. And then it began having parties at the house with boys that knew me in the community or boys that I went to school with. That included alcohol, and I got told what to wear and what to allow the boys to do. So you can imagine the type of framing of my young mind. During all of this, I had taken my last action of self-defense, which I chose to quit bathing because being in the bathroom was my worst nightmare. So I chose to quit bathing, and actually I didn't have time to bathe. I wasn't given the time to bathe, and I wasn't given a toothbrush, and I wasn't taken to the dentist. And so I began, getting covered with layers of dirt and filth, and my skin would get itchy, and I'd dig and I'd scratch in the anxiety of waiting for him to come prowling around in the middle of the night. And I got, my body was covered with these infected sores, and my teeth were all rotted and broken off, and the front teeth, not the back teeth, the front teeth. So when I smiled, it was there. And my homework was never done, and, you know, in gym class, you're standing next to each other, locker to locker, and, you know, they would see the strap marks on my back and the bruises and, you know, just horrible, horrible things that people actually witnessed. And my teachers, unfortunately, by the time I was in eighth grade, they completely avoided having direct contact with me. They would stand at a distance when they talked to me. that's how I went. I attended the same school system in a small Illinois town for 6 consecutive years. We lived in the same center of town. We did move within the center of that same little town about 4 or 5 different times in those 6 years. But people knew us. Everybody knew us. Everybody knew of the kind of parties that got held at the house. And when I got to an age where I was started working in the community, then I would hear people whispering and talking, and you know, the boys talked about it in the hallways at school, or their parents would talk about how horrible I looked. But the one thing nobody ever did was ask me if I was okay, or ask me if they could get me some help. So it was like another layer of enforced silence and dismissal and shame that was quite typical of the 70s and 80s of, you know, just leaving victims in these situations, young children to grow up in violent homes fueled by, you know, alcoholic rage or drug addictions or mental illness. I mean, what kind of mental problems or what kind of historical trauma have they gone through? Not that it excuses them, but maybe something that it causes them to have these thought processes about their very own children. That is why I have to keep doing what we're doing today. You know, these are things that when I got into my adult years, I went from one violent abuser to the next. I've gone through so many extreme physical harms that I'm on disability today at age 57 and have been for a number of years, and pain management and all kinds of injuries and concussion syndrome and fibromyalgia and all of that stuff that goes with it. But our bodies, the patterns of life, the way our health is overall, the way it affects our kids, the way it cycles into our grandkids, I don't understand why we can't, what pieces are we missing that this continues to happen? What services, as much as we've been talking about it, and I know I've been active for 10 years, and I know that everyone, all of the NASCA family, most of my NASCA family, like I said, we go way back. We've been at it for 10 years or more since Facebook came out. So what are we missing? I'm open to any thoughts, ideas. I'm ready to get them out there. I'm ready to talk to legislators. We've changed statute of limitations in Illinois for involuntary servitude and sexual servitude of a minor. What was once 1 year after their 18th birthday, they now have a minimum of 25 years after their 18th birthday, and in some situations, zero statute of limitations. So they can grow up and understand what's happening and get the help that they need, and then decide how they want to proceed. Do they want to push through for justice? Do they want to get? Is this an offender we need to get off the streets? Is this an offender that and a family situation that we need to involve services with, or get them to take a look at this to give some kind of, what do we need to do? So I know that my story is really horrific, but on the other side of that, I came out of it. I'm in a long-term loving and supportive relationship now for 15 years with a fabulous guy, and he supported me through all of my breakthroughs and my breakdowns and my chaotic emotions of recovery. And I have 3 amazing kids and 3 amazing grandkids. And all I want is to help them have the best life they can be possibly have, and try to help as many kids not live the same kind of crap that me and their parents and their grandparents had to go through. We got to draw a line in the sand somewhere. So
absolutely. you have really given us a lot of content already, as I already
sorry.
Indicated you would. No, please. There is no sorry necessary. I appreciate you, and like you said, I go back over three decades before the internet even existed in doing this.
Has it been that long for you? I mean, I know that you speak out for your brother, whom you lost in foster care, and you know it's that, and plus what you went through yourself, and you know how heart wrenching that after 30 years you still got to keep pushing to get that.
Well, actually, the reality is then if you go the way back to there, I've been doing this over five decades. But actually actively doing it and making an everyday part of my life, for over 30 years. But it's not about me. It's about what we're doing to make a change for these kids out here that are coming up.
Correct.
We do have two panelists. We do have
Wonderful.
Two panelists. So let's
Who
go ahead and
have?
Get them in here for that share some time with you. We have, first we're going to bring Bailey out of South Florida. She's also my co-host this evening, helping me behind the scenes. Bailey, you are back.
And she's
the
one who keeps us all connected. Yes.
Yep.
Hi, Trish. Thank
Hi,
you,
Bailey.
Charlie. How are you? As you can tell, I'm not feeling so great. Thank you, Charlie, for taking over last. I'm listening to you, and you know, as I always say on every show, it's mind-boggling the things that you overcome. And many other of our NASCA family members. I'm a domestic violence survivor. So child sexual abuse, I cannot relate to. I'm empathetic. I know trauma. I know the PTSD. I know all that stuff. And I can relate to abuse, but I cannot relate to that. And you know, one of the things is how does a parent, unless they're a sociopath or a psychopath or have bipolar or have a personality disorder, how do they just
unless they
stand
have a
mental, by?
Yeah. Yes. How do they
I
become
don't get
complicit?
It.
Yeah, how,
I don't
you
get
know, it wasn't
I
just
would kill
my stepfather. Oh, God, yes, me too, in a heartbeat. I would sit in prison gladly to protect them, in a heartbeat. And my kids are grown, and I would do the same for my grandkids.
Yep.
You know, I mean, touch them, and oh, my goodness gracious, you know, hell is going to rain down from the skies. I can't fathom. I mean, when I became a mom, and I became a young mom because we got pregnant young back in those days, you know, they had told me at first, at 19, they told me I was going to have a hysterectomy because I was so scarred up from infection and everything that I would never be able to have children. So I was in the hospital for a period of 3 days with IV antibiotics and you know, a continued round of antibiotics, and they found precancerous cells, and they were going to do this cryosurgery and all of this. This was going to be the working option that we did before we did the hysterectomy. And my doctors, two doctors, two OB specialists told me, you will never be able to get pregnant, maybe with the help of fertility, but I doubt it. And then I got blessed. I got blessed. Not just once, but three times with, you know, three very different children. I have children. My kids, of course, have suffered through watching their mom getting beaten. They themselves have been harmed in different ways. They grew up in domestic violence, but it was a huge part of every relationship I had until I was 40 years old. So my entire life was absorbed by trauma. And it was like when I was going through therapy and I was writing my justice, I actually was finding myself. Yeah. because I had been buried in so much darkness that I didn't even know where I was. You know, there is no identity created when you are drugged and manipulated and terrorized into multiple sexual activities with multiple people within the same small communities. And, you know, you rot away and you decay away and nobody helps you. There's no identity other than slavery. And it is so difficult in those darkest of recovery days when you are first having to try and look yourself in the mirror and just try to absorb things that happen to you. And unfortunately, we get so overwhelmed with it because it comes rushing back all at once. So my therapist had to help me figure out how to take it piece by piece. And for me, that process was actually how my justice was written. It was starting off with my good and my happy, and then going into the first event and then the second, and how it developed over the years and how I developed and the relationships and the parenting and all it. And but then the recovery and the comeback, you know, they always say, you know, we all have setbacks. It's about your comeback, you know, and we can come back from it. We really, really can. I didn't think I ever would. And I am today. So I'm just grateful that somehow, some way, I found the right resources. I think that our resources, you know, even just on the NASCA team, you know, we are becoming more aware, more educated, and more trauma informed. I talk with law enforcement and I talk with educators, and, you know, I do training on human trafficking and family abuse, and I talk about trauma-informed care, and we train the hospital here, and there's so many things that we do to help people today, and so we've come so far. I know so many amazing counselors and therapists that have focused on the development of trauma and child advocate services, and just a load of experts that I never knew existed. That we've always had these types of organizations, but for some reason, you know, far too often they don't get notified or they don't get the support they need.
Can I chime in?
Sure, please, please, because I'm losing myself here. Please do.
And the reason for that is because they still sweep a lot of this under the rug. I mean, it's, child sexual abuse is becoming more talked about.
Thank goodness.
You know, not as much as domestic violence, which is what I, I'm a big advocate for that. But you said before, you asked the question before to get this changed, you know, to get, so that this doesn't happen for another generation. And one of the things that I'm always preaching is that we need to talk to our communities. We need to talk to, we have to educate people. We have to bring awareness. And we
and
need
never
to do
stop.
It in our public schools, in our private schools. And I believe... I know that I heard that in South Florida they did. They were starting to implement a mental health course.
Curriculum. Yes.
It was starting like more or less before COVID. So I don't know what will be, you know, going on. But I think that one of the biggest things is if we bring it into the schools at a very young age. And we get these kids to understand that it's not okay and there are safe people to talk to, I think that would help tremendously. That's my opinion.
It will help tremendously. That's a key way to, and, you know, we want to keep family, friends, community leaders, schools. We want to keep all of those responsible adult people informed and aware and connect them to resources. At the same time, I think another disconnect that we have is that often, far too often, abusers will use the Child Protective Services, DCFS, CYS, whatever it's called in all the different states, they will use the Child Protective Services Division as another level of fear and control. You tell and they will take you away and you will not see your siblings again and you will not see your mom again and you will be separated from the family and you will be in the system. And, you know, everyone knows, talks about the foster care system and the overwhelming amount of children that get lost through the cracks of the foster care, you know, so that's like another level of fear. So
I'm sorry to interrupt you again, and I know I'm not hosting, being the main host.
You're
of the
fine.
Show,
you're fine.
But I have more to say. But Mary Ellen was holding, and then she just came back.
Oh
so,
goodness! Oh yes.
Yeah. So if Charlie
sorry.
Wants to mute me and put Mary Ellen back on since she called back in, but I want if you can come back to me because I didn't finish what I was talking
yeah,
about.
Absolutely.
But let Mary Ellen talk.
Sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Absolutely, Bailey. And Trister is absolutely zero reason to say sorry. It's your special night. You talk where you need to. And Mary Ellen, Trister's from New York, so we're going to bring her in. Mary Ellen, you're on live with Trish.
Good evening. Sorry, yes, I did have to drop out for a second. I had someone trying to call, and they kept cutting in, and I was afraid it would interrupt the show. I'm glad to hear your story tonight, and I'm sure I will gain greatly from everything you have to share. So I don't want to interrupt. You can go back where you were. But I definitely can relate to several things I've heard you comment on. So I'm glad I called in tonight. Thank you.
Well, you sound like you've got a great spark in your voice, Mary Ellen. And if you can relate on many levels and you still have that light-hearted spark in your voice, then that means that you're okay.
I really
got through it.
I've been trying to look at things in a better light lately, you know, and one of the panelists on this show actually said to me way back when I first started calling in something to the effect of, you know, keep in mind you're not what happened to you. And that
Indeed.
Has really stuck with me. You know,
you're not there anymore. Yeah.
I think I was constantly feeling like I had this, you know, the scarlet letter on my forehead or something. And
right. Yes.
When the person made that comment, it was like, that, you know, yeah, I need to start recognizing.
You lay down that bag of bricks. Yeah.
You kind of are
able to let some of that burden go and say, wow, you know, you're right. I'm not that person. It just because I grew up like that, or
yeah.
just because, you know, my adult life was affected by this person or this trauma or that trauma, that doesn't mean that that's who you are. That's just
yeah.
something that happened to you. And
yeah.
I, you know, recovery and rebuilding is so incredible because you're taking charge of that now. And it's not who this person or that person wants you to be. It's, you know, it's all you, and you get to shine.
Yeah, and I just had a perfect example happen this weekend when I had went to my therapist weekly, and she made a comment to me, something about, when are we going to talk about what you're holding back tonight? And I'm like, I'm not, you know, I'm fine. She's like, no, there's something. I'm like, no, I'm fine. Well, it wasn't 2 hours later. I'm sitting having dinner thinking how lovely it was. And mind you, I have an eating disorder over all this. So for me to say my dinner was lovely was huge, right? And the next thing I know, the tears are just flowing. And I'm like, oh, boy, here comes those emotions. Well,
that's a breakthrough.
You know, I sat right there and cried through it. And then I enjoyed my dinner, loved every minute of it. And I thought, that's a huge
step. Oh, my God, that is incredible. Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah. So, moving forward.
Little things like that. Little things like that. Just keep us going and let us know that, you know, wow, it's really done. It's over. And I'm not a person. That's not who I am. It's not who I want to be.
And, you know, in the past, I might have beat myself up over being crying or whatever, having the emotions, not being able to control them. But I said, no, I'm learning. I am a highly sensitive person, and that is okay. And that's like it's one of my better qualities, and I've always tried to stop it. And it's like, why?
Yeah, being sensitive, empathetic is a tremendous thing, and it's such a rare thing. And being sincere, and, you know, people are like, you know, oh, my God, they're so emotional. No, I'm emotional because I'm feeling this person's pain. Do you not feel this? Do you not see this?
I usually run around thinking, why am I so different, you know? No, that's a blessing.
Yeah, we used to think we were different because it was all shame and darkness and sorrow. But when we get to the other side of it, we start seeing these little sparks of being different because you know, think about the strength of a child who can carry so much from one day to the next for years. And never let on to the outside world just how tragic their life is.
Absolutely.
That they just carry it. They parent other children. That maybe they go out and find ways to make money to feed their siblings. Maybe, you know, maybe they're just coping through their own stuff. But think of the strength of that child just to continue to carry that. You know,
absolutely.
It's an amazing power. So, let her sing, darling. Let her sing.
Thank you. And I'm glad to be here tonight.
Thank you. Bailey, you said you wanted to take up where you had left off. I'm sorry, Charlie, you kind of got pushed aside there. I apologize.
it's ladies' night. No worries. I'm okay. I'm comfortable where I am. I'm all right. Let's get Bailey back in here. Right now, tonight, we have Bailey and Mary Ellen have called in so far. I do want to remind our listeners that if you want to call in and join our panel, we'd love to have you, 646-595-2118. But I'm going to leave – we have three powerhouse women tonight on the show, and I'm just going to leave all three of your mics so you can have a conversation, and I'll just chime in once in a while. Go at it. Go ahead, Bailey.
Yes.
Thanks for your patience.
My pleasure. No problem. So basically – I'm noticing that getting back to how do we stop this from continuing to happen, and how do we get the message out there? So my motto is always community awareness and education. As a matter of fact, they started doing this class that I actually took. It's called Mental health first aid.
I'm certified. Yes.
Yeah. So I can't teach it because I found out about it too late, so I couldn't have like an organization. The funds ran out. An organization sponsor me. So I just took the course. So that's what we need. We need that in our. We need more of that in the schools. The teachers should have to take that course. Because it teaches you how to recognize signs in children. Cops, I know they're training cops in a similar in a similar way.
Yeah,
my,
the trauma-informed care, the trauma-informed response is crucial to recognize, you know, I mean, we talk about warning signs, the bruises in odd places, and definitely the homework not being done, and the personality and the behavioral problems, and possibly substance use, and, you know, maybe self-harming behavior or promiscuous behavior. We talk about the warning signs, and then helping them know that when, you know, when you see these warning signs, let's approach them. Let's not leave them lay. Let's not turn away from them, because generations, human history, have turned away from them, and that's gotten us nowhere. So it's time that we try something different, and we use our knowledge in what we've not only experienced, but what we learn from each other, and what experts go to school for years to help us understand and learn, and how to help each other get through a bad moment, and how to help a child report, how to find social workers that and caseworkers that are committed to helping, and to law enforcement who are there and are going to protect them, to teachers that can help them get through a tough day at school when their anxiety is acting up. You know, there's so much in so many levels, and it is. It's community awareness and community efforts and continuing education and talking, being able to talk about it even in our own families or sitting down with our friends over a cup of coffee. And, you know, I'm really grateful to the we've got some outstanding board of directors for Butterfly Dreams Alliance, and they are experts in their field. We have a trauma-informed specialist, MSW, Paul Simon Public Policy Institute scholar, SIU School of Medicine, and she actually is the one who created and wrote out the recovery program of Survivor to Thriver through that the ASCA support system uses, which is the recovery system that I used, you know, 8-10 years ago. She's the one who actually wrote it and created it for ASCA. And it's a nationally used and worldwide program that survivors use today. She's phenomenal, and she's on our board, and I'm so grateful. I didn't know that she'd wrote it back then. I didn't know that she wrote it when she joined the board of directors. I didn't know it till about a year later that we got to talking about it, and, you know, she's like, yeah, this is the program. I'm like, oh, my God, I use this. This is the one I use, you know. But we have physicians, Assistant Associate Director of the SIU School of Medicine Physicians Assistance Program, who is also a speaker for the National Human Trafficking Resource Center. And we have a teacher who is a faculty of learning and teaching at SIU Edwardsville here, and, you know, she mentors teachers and creates the curriculum for up and coming teachers. I mean, we've got the YMCA director here, we've got the mayor, phenomenal people, and I've learned
so much from them. We need to have this in every single state. That's how we're going to have change.
Yes.
So we need you have to somehow pass it on.
Create that energy. Create that energy.
I am jealous that you have a chance to train law enforcement, because that was something that I promised myself I want to do. But I don't want to go to school for it. I want to be sponsored to tell my story, because I had a horrific, horrific time with cops. It was horrific. It was a disaster. It was a nightmare. You know, victims of domestic violence and children of abuse, because children of abuse children are abused.
Oh, for generations they've been ignored by witnessing
the child. And, you know, they never took me seriously. It was a joke, you know. I mean, in the end, it took so much fighting till my ex was locked up and for a very short time. But, you know, cops need to hear stories, and they need to, and not just for domestic violence, but for all kinds of horrific things that have happened.
Yeah.
They need to learn empathy.
I know that the law enforcement officers that I speak with, it's at the Southwestern Illinois College Police Academy, and then they are dispatched throughout the state. But we've had classes up to 45 officers just before the COVID thing happened. And I kind of piggyback with our local domestic violence shelter services. They invite me along and they educate about domestic violence. And then I follow up with awareness about, you know, how to handle those calls whenever they go out for a domestic disturbance or a domestic violence call, and how to make sure that they are truly walking in there aware, trauma-informed about, you don't know how long this has been going on. You have no clue what's been happening. You don't know how the kids have been affected. You don't know how the, you know, who the victim is or what evils have been going on. And trust me, it can get dark and it can last forever. And it happens. And you are seen as one of the worst evils coming through that door. Because our DCFS, our children's services system, and
that's
our law enforcement system,
they are feared.
They are a constant source of torment and abuse, and they are used by abusers to keep people in line. I'll have you arrested. You'll be the one taken away. Law enforcement are going to believe me. They're not going to believe you. You're crazy. Look at the way you're acting. You know, oh my God, there are so many different levels that those two services, which are meant to be there to be our first responders and our helpers, are being used by abusers to be
1,000%. Abusers are charmers. They know how to charm. Well, in my situation, they know how to gaslight and to charm.
Oh, goodness gracious, they're experts at it. They know within the first 15 minutes whether or not they're going to be able to ever manipulate you.
So going back, this is going to be my last thing because I want everybody else to have a chance to talk. But going back to saying how, you know, your question, how do we stop this? So we need to educate, again, our authorities from being able to profile, to be able to see right through these people, these abusers. And DCF, or whatever it's called, Vanguard DCF, it's a joke. My ex-husband sent me a text, word for word, step by step, what he was going to do, what he was going to call DCF and what he was going to say. And when she came to my door, I showed her my phone. Okay? And she looked at what was written from the anonymous phone call. But it was an anonymous phone call, so they couldn't do anything. But let me tell you something. Making a false claim to DCF is illegal. But he got away
with it. Making a false police report is illegal.
Go on.
Yeah, on the other side of this coin, for everything that we do to help victims get services, when I talk to teenagers, and teenagers are emotional creatures, and we can all remember being teenagers when You know, if our friends didn't talk to us, it was the worst possible thing in the world. And if we had sex with someone that we chose to have sex with and they didn't call us the next day or didn't mm-hmm. talk to us the next day, we were shattered. Okay? That still happens today. Teenagers are still teenagers today.
It still happens to adults also.
Yes, absolutely. It even happens with adults. So to turn yep. that around and come back, you know, without any evidence and be able to willingly accuse and destroy an innocent person who has done nothing inappropriate or nothing that they felt was inappropriate and everything that they felt was consensual. But we have allowed the laws to be used to make victims out of innocent people. And granted, it is not very many, of course. You know, I mean, definitely there are far less reports made mm-hmm. than actually happen. You know, for every one report that is made, at least six others are not. We know that we are not reaching the victims like we need to be able to reach the victims.
Right.
But at the same time, we've got to be careful about how we investigate and how we proceed with prosecution, because not even murderers can be held
right.
accountable unless there is evidence against them somehow. Maybe it's the trauma victim. Maybe it's the gun, maybe it's the actual DNA, but there's got to be something.
So there has to be better training. There has to be another
yes,
kind of
exactly,
training.
Exactly, from our justice
that,
system all the way
yep.
through. Absolutely.
Yep.
Because we've opened the doors, and now we've got laws in place, so now we have to make sure that we're educating about the other side of that as well.
Right. Yep.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. Charlie? Powerful conversation. Powerful conversation. Mary Ellen, are you still here?
Oops. Yes, I'm here. Yep.
Okay, I heard somebody say Charlie. Was that you or was that Trish?
Oh, nope, that was not me.
It was me.
I was
saying, Charlie, why don't you talk because we've taken over the show. I'm going to mute myself.
Yeah.
Well, listen, there's no taking over the show because tonight's show is for Trish. So whatever Trish wants, I'm just here to be the assistant along for Trish's special guest show. So tonight is Trish's show, and she's controlling
the
flow and how it goes.
Under
and I just,
it.
Yeah, I just get to see names and things, you know. But, yeah, Trish.
But I'm sure you've got thoughts
on
this as well, Charlie. I mean, how do you feel as you've seen – you know, we've all seen those cases that have, from adults or to teenagers who have made false accusations. And, you know, if you're in a small community and somebody brings forth these charges against you and you have not done these things, the cycle of destruction that happens in your life.
Right.
You know, society will rip you to shreds, even if you've not done
right.
anything. So.
Right. And when those and here's the side of it for me as in conversing about this particular portion, when those false narratives are brought forth, when those stories that later on are debunked and found not to be factual, it has a major adverse effect on the actual ones that are happening. And that's the part
Thank you.
That irks me. It's not, I mean, it's
yes.
bad enough to have improper stories, but now when you have that, you know, that genuine come along that needs immediate assistance, and it becomes the boy who cried wolf or the girl who cried wolf.
Correct.
And I think that's important for us, for the listeners, both tonight and in the future, because as we know, these shows are archived. Listen, if you know of someone that has been through some kind of trauma, and whatever it is, okay, trauma is trauma. It doesn't matter what it is. But you see them taking that trauma and going in a direction that isn't factual to what the trauma was. I would suggest that you assist them and guide them back to actually say the facts about what happened. So that way, when they share what they dealt with, the exposure is real. Believe me,
and
for
this
every
is what
real
they
story,
felt.
They get...
Absolutely. Yes. And this is how they
say,
felt about it. This is the part that hurts them.
Right. Right. For what I was going to say is, for every one real story that gets out there, one real person or two real people step up. For every one fake story that gets out there, 10, hundreds silence themselves because they say, nobody's going to believe me.
Correct.
So we've got to
find
a way to
thank you.
Turn
what
this
a,
around.
What a great way to, yes. Thank you. That was perfect. And so true, because it's taking away all of the hard work that's been done over the past decade to actually put resources in place and to actually help those who have been harmed. And, you know, maybe you're accusing one person when it's someone else, you know, whatever it may be, we have to make sure that we want to support those people. Like you said, bring them back, get them, make sure that we're talking to them and guiding them, you know, let's figure it out. What is it that happened? And, you know, how did you feel about it? And let's talk about it. You know, let's get back to the real story of things.
Right. What we don't want to do, and I don't want our listeners to maybe because I was always thinking about what I said. I don't want our listeners to think that if someone comes forth with a story, we should just go to begin to analyze and dismantle it. We should believe what we hear, especially especially if it's coming from the mouth of a child, because children come from the pureness and innocence. They don't know anything else.
They do not know. They don't have, until they reach about 15 years old, they don't have the ability or the language to develop stories of these types.
Right. Unless they are conditioned and groomed and can be.
Correct.
You know, and unfortunately, we do know that happens. But like I was saying, it's just so important. And to parlay off of that into another area that you and I know you and I've dealt with out here in the land of Cyberville since it opened its gates to us. While it's a blessing, it also can be, as you and I both know, such a curse at the same time with, you know, quasi-organizations and people claiming to do things or have things. And you get behind
them, or you
support them or somebody else. The next thing you know, it's fine. It's like, oh, my goodness. And you know what? For Trish, for me, and I know for you too, because you and I have known each other a long time, you talked about the 10 years of work. It's not even about that. It's about that child right now, somewhere right now, as we're listening to this show, as we're doing this show, as we're putting this show, there's a child, children, multiple children, that need someone to step up and be their voice. And
absolutely.
Those are the ones that, you know, we can talk about what we
want to reach
do,
those.
What we can
yeah.
do.
You know, I mean,
do,
I don't want
talk
people
about
to
it.
Take I don't want people to take what I said in the wrong way, because the cases of those that are proven to be false accusations only make up about 2%. Now, 2% isn't a big number until you start talking, you know, 3 million reports coming in and 2% of those. So, yes, it's a number that we need to be aware of. However, we never, ever want to reject a person who comes forward and says that they need help or that they've been hurt. We need to be able to talk to them and to help them and let the experts determine and let it move forward, help them move forward with and let them know not to be afraid, that it's okay, that, you know, whatever it is, there's help out there. We're not back in the dark ages anymore. We're not silent anymore, and no one, it's written in our United Nations Declaration of Human Rights, it's written in our U.S. Constitution, we are all equal, we are all deserving of safety, no one has a right hurt you or to terrorize you or to sexually use you or sell you. You are not a commodity. No one has a right to try and change who you are or to use torment or torture to make you change. No one has a right to cause you fear. You don't have to live in fear. We're not those people anymore. And if we're going to change this for our kids, we've really got to stand strong in that. And like Mary Ellen said so well when she connected no longer being that victim, we are not those people anymore. We are not the generation of our parents or our grandparents. We are our own human beings, and today we're marching for equality, and we are marching for equal rights, and we are marching for safety, and we are marching for so many that we cannot forget our kids.
Mm-hmm.
We cannot forget those
right.
that are being hurt every single day and in so many horrific, horrible manners. We hear case after case coming forward of little children being hurt and murdered. And like I started off the show, we
right.
got to draw a line in the sand and say, okay, that's it. You know, what else is it going to take? It's frustrating to be an advocate. It is heart-wrenching because you are supporting and you're hearing and you're talking people through their tough moments. And at the same time, you're trying to educate and empower the community members, and you're talking to legislative measures, and you know, you're doing everything you can, and it seems like that wheel is moving so slowly, and things do move slowly. This is a topic whenever it comes to harming another human being, and especially a child, on any level. It's
right.
It's something that has to be brought and made an urgent problem, an urgent human problem, just as much as this pandemic is. Those are the numbers of kids being hurt. You know, those are the numbers of victims that are still being trapped and tormented and hurt and sold and whatever. But if we're not talking about it and not making casual conversation out of it and not asking our political parties to say, yes, this is wrong and these are the things that we need to do to help make it right, or these are the task force we need, or these are the services, we got to do something. We just can't continue on like we have been. That just fuels
Absolutely.
The substance abuse problems and the mental health problems
Yes.
and the chronic health problems and the suicide
Absolutely.
Rates and everything else. So it's all
Absolutely.
Impacted.
Right, absolutely. Can you believe we are actually, this is amazing. I just looked at the time. We are down to 20, a little over 20 minutes left of the show. It's incredible how fast this goes. I always say that, like an hour and a half sounds like such a long time beforehand, and then the show starts, and you go,
Once
oh
you
my,
get in the conversation, though. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Well, I want to get Bailey back in here for a bit. I know she wasn't feeling well, and I know she isn't feeling well.
Yeah.
But I do want to bring her back into the conversation. So here she is, Bailey. You're back on with Trish.
Hi.
Hey, Bailey.
Said,
I do hope that it's
yeah.
nothing serious for you, dear.
No,
just know
I
that
took,
you're in my heart.
I already took the COVID test because I'm flying on Thursday, so. I'm on antibiotics,
oh.
so I should be okay. I have a lot of stress, and I get sick very easily when I'm stressed. So,
mm-hmm.
Anyway, so I like I said, whenever I post something, and I think you're on my Facebook, I always post when it's about things like this. I always say community awareness, education, mental health awareness. Because all of those things are tied together in order to help these children, the next generation. And obviously we want our kids who've witnessed horrific things or have heard of these horrific things that their parents have been through or parents. So we want to end it. I would never want my kids to go through what I went through. And they're boys.
Correct.
They saw their father do things. The same, for child sexual abuse. Like you said, your kids witnessed working on yourself and trying to get better and all that kind of stuff. Our kids see. I know in my house, we trigger each other still. It's very hard. It is very hard. I mean, we had a big thing the other day. I mean, and so, yes, we can be healed, but we're never fully, I don't believe we'll ever fully be healed. It's always going to be,
we simply can't erase what's happened. We can't erase those little notches of trauma that have been left in our lives. We can't go back and change time. We can't go back, I can't erase it. It's just as much as I have the scars that cover my body today, Clee, that you can see. It's almost like every one of those little layers of scars that are all over my body are also inside.
Layers.
You know, I still get, this pandemic has caused my anxiety to go off, my depression.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It has triggered my fears. It has, never before have I felt, because I am immunocompromised and my lungs are horribly, horrible. I've had lung problems since I was 37 years old. pardon me, and I'm still a chronic smoker. That's tied to every emotion I have. I mean, I started smoking at 12 years old. My mother found cigarette butts on my windowsill in my bedroom. They weren't mine. I was not smoking in my bedroom. I had only casually tried a cigarette with a friend here or there at that time. They were my stepfather's from him being in my room at night. But when she found them, she came to me and she said, if you're going to smoke, you're going to smoke in front of me. So since I couldn't cry and I couldn't scream and I couldn't fight back and I couldn't run and I couldn't get help, the one thing I was allowed to do was have a cigarette.
Right.
So after every experience that I went through, I had a cigarette. And, it is such a part of all of my emotions and triggers. And I don't know. I don't know if I could – I don't know if my lungs could exist without that carbon monoxide and toxins going in there to feed them. It's terrible. I'm 57. I've been smoking for decades. And, it's terrible that it's still such an addiction for me. It's the one thing. I've gotten off of opioids. I've gotten off of alcohol. I've conquered my pain management. I was taking up to 120 milligrams of morphine a day for 6 years. And I got off of it. I got off of all of it. But the one thing that I can't let go of are the horrible cigarettes, which, of course are still very dangerous. But it's an anxiety thing. As you remember these secondary traumas and they begin to surface again, and we go out in the world and we're out grocery shopping and all of a sudden we still have something that all of a sudden comes back into our heads for whatever chaotic reason. Maybe we don't even recognize the reason. But what's even worse is that the people that are around us, they have no idea what's causing us to get so upset. So they don't know. We feel worse about being triggered. But yet these are things that we are not going to be able to erase or change. So I work on positive ways to get through them. One of those was a great trick that my therapist gave me. And I used to feel like such a fool because during work, I would go out to my car and sit during lunchtime. And of course, sitting there with my cigarette, I had this list of 5 positive things about myself. And I felt like a fool reading it out loud. But I tell people, focus on your happy memories, focus on a happy place, do your breathing, do your touching, your tapping, do your distractions to bring yourself back to the present. And then you can go on with yourself because you can't erase it. But if you learn to cope through it and breathe through it, tap through it, walk through it, whatever it is that you need to go and escape in your mind to a beach somewhere, whatever you need to do to get out of it in that moment, that's your sacred place. And that's your sacred tool that is going to help you conquer anything that you are triggered about that might come your way.
So if I could just quickly add, I'm very blessed that I've chosen a healthy outlet and that is working out.
Well, good for you.
Unfortunately, I had 2 car accidents back to back where I was rear-ended, and
oh no, I'm sorry.
I couldn't work out. I'm a runner and I kickbox, and so even after kickboxing in the morning, I would go if I needed that outlet. I'd go for a run at night. So it's been really difficult. I'm trying a little here, a little there, but I definitely go out for a walk at almost every night. I was thinking how one time I was in the gym and we were doing a class, and all of a sudden I had tears coming down my face. And a memory, something must have popped up in my head. And the coach looked at me and she was, she made a comment or something, like, sympathetic. You know, we can't, those things that have happened, like I was saying earlier, we are not what happened to us, but the things that have happened to us are always going, and it will be less, obviously, the more we heal, the more time goes by.
We get stronger, yes. Time heals.
We get stronger,
wiser.
I don't have a partner. And I mean, mine is still fresh, but I have 3 kids that I'm raising all by myself. And that's like a daily reminder. It's daily reminders of what the damage that was done, and I'm stuck.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I wouldn't want it any other way, but you know what? We get to, everybody says you're so strong, you're so this, I don't have a choice. You know,
right.
I don't have a choice.
You know, when you're in it, when you're getting on the other side of it, you really don't have a choice. You can get lost and you can let it consume every part of you and take your life away from you. Or you can, you know, try to pull yourself up and get through it moment by moment if you have to, and reach out to people. And, you know, thank goodness for the internet with all of its blessings.
Yes.
And, you know, connect with NASCA. Connect with, if you go on, Google is your best friend.
I have great friends.
Awesome.
I'm very lucky.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know.
Absolutely. We're down to 10 minutes. I definitely want to get
okay.
And I'm going to leave your
mic
queued up, Bailey.
Mute me.
No, okay. Well, Bailey, before I mute you, I want to tell you this. I know you're a single mom raising 3 boys. There may be times that you need the boys to speak to someone from a male perspective. If you need that or they need that,
yeah,
keep my number handy. You call me. It doesn't matter.
My oldest has been very challenging lately, and I'm leaving him home alone while I go to New York for my son's surgery. So.
Okay.
Yeah,
well,
it's not going to be easy.
Well, you put me in touch. If you should show desire and feel comfortable, you put me in touch, and I will be there to be a guiding light or a lighthouse in the darkness. Okay. You're welcome, sis.
Thank you.
All right. You're welcome. Let's get Mary Ellen back on here. Mary Ellen, you are back on with Trish. Believe it or not, we have just a little under. We're at 10 minutes.
Yeah, I'm not going to interrupt. I just want to say I've enjoyed every bit of tonight's show, and I'm listening intently. So thank you for sharing.
Thank you. Good luck with everything. Yeah. I mean, like I said, you've got such a spark in your voice. You're going to be just fine. You're in a good place. And just let that be the strength that carries you forward. And, you know, for Bailey, hon, I've been that broken single mom raising my three kids, and I barely had any education to fall back on. I took an 18-month business course and graduated valedictorian, yay for me. But that I used that to build a career for myself that I could do the best I could for my kids. And back in the 90s, we weren't talking about trauma yet, and therapists weren't talking and addressing trauma with kids yet. They know so much more than they did way back when. And the kids have, I know that my kids experienced so much in the things that they heard and the things that they witnessed, the things that they endured. And, you know, they still suffer from those emotional wounds deep inside. And so I help them today just as much as I help anyone else that reaches out to me, and in many different ways, because I see how the lasting effect of not having services available back then has affected them. And, you know, the best thing that I can say is keep them talking and let them know that, you know, talking about it is okay, that they're in a good place now, that they will get through this, and you and your family will get through this. You're going to be fine, and you're doing everything you can, and you've got plenty of friends and experts that are there for them anytime that they need someone. And if there's any services that you need and you can't find them, give me a buzz, give me a text, hit me up on Facebook, whatever it takes. You know, I'm here for you. I've been that mom. My heart goes out to you.
Absolutely.
So hang in there.
And I can attest to our listeners to what Trish is saying. She will be there for you. Her and I have had many conversations throughout the years, and you can hear from her tonight. She's a powerhouse. She's full of ambition, but not just ambition, but actually get stuff done. So you have talkers out there, and they're necessary because they get the conversation started, but then you have the people that take the talk and spring it into action. And Trish, our special guest tonight, is that person. She talks it and then she walks it, and she walks it with her standing beside it, guiding it. So what a great show you've given us tonight, Trish. I anticipated it was going to be before it even started, when as soon as I saw your name.
You know me, once I get talking, I just get going, man. You got my soapbox now.
Yeah, let's see, I'm chatty Charlie, so you'll be Trish the talker.
Yes.
You know what?
Oh,
isn't it beautiful, though, that, you know, those of us, I belong to a group called Children of the Secret, and those of us who were children of the secret that were held in silence, now voices are being heard and turned up, so that children now, sadly, the reality of what we experience, we do know, sadly, some children are actually experiencing the same thing now, or possibly even worse if you could fathom that. But at least there's hope now that voices are going to be heard, and the more voices are heard, the more exposure is presented. And therein lies what I think is a solution. Yes. Let me go ahead and bring Bailey back in here.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, unfortunately, there's no magic wand that we can wave to make all this better.
We need a bewitch nose. I want a bewitch nose.
Right.
I used to say that all the time. I want a bewitch nose.
Absolutely. But here's what I do know without a doubt. I've never seen an inferno become an inferno without a spark that got it going. Okay?
Oh, beautifully
I've never seen
said. Beautifully said.
All right. And right now, there's sparks shooting all over the place that are lighting up little pieces in the corner of, and embers are starting to, that were glowing and dying are starting to come to life. And it shows like this. It's people like you, Trish. It's people like Bailey, Mary Ellen, the other callers, NASCA, Bill, and the multitude of other organizations out there that are allowing this once silenced topic to be brought forth and enlightened. And, hey, you're going to have those people that shut the door on you, don't want to hear it. Stop posting so much stuff about that on Facebook or on wherever, LinkedIn or wherever you are. Let them go because they're not there
yeah.
for the reason that you're there.
They're not worth it. Yeah, they're not
yeah,
worth it.
Yeah,
and, you know,
I told
you
Bailey
have
I was
the right
get her back
to block
here.
Or delete. Yes.
Yeah. And Bailey, you're back on. I just want to say, Trish, and I'm not sure if I think almost all of us will identify this. You know what I miss about the phone that was hooked to the wall? When somebody called me that made me mad, I could slam it, and they could get that ping.
Right?
How do you slam a cell phone? You can't. You just hit the button.
All you
it's
can do is click now.
I know, right? give me a good
oh
old slam
God,
on
yes.
the air phone once in a while.
Indeed.
But,
that
but
way you know how upset I am.
I don't,
Bailey,
I don't
keep
know
your
if
mic
I need
back
it.
Up, and Mary Ellen.
Am I on?
You're on. You are on,
man.
You
hear me? No, because
I
see
I
the thing moving around. Thank you. No, I'm. You know, it's really great to get to meet more and more NASCA family members or people that are joining, but especially the veterans because. You have a lot to offer. And again, you know, my empathy, the pain that you have gone through in your life and the fact that you can talk about all of those things to help others is amazing. And I believe we're friends on Facebook.
Yes, we are.
So it's nice to finally get to talk to you. I get so many friend requests, and I have to like check them out because I get all nervous that I have a stalker. So
yes,
well,
absolutely.
So,
yes, you got to be
Bailey,
careful of the predators out there. Yes.
Yeah, yes. I got to tell you, Bailey, that you already know this for sure from tonight's show. You align with Trish. You've aligned with genuine. You've aligned with the real deal. Okay, it's you don't have to worry about any fake or anything there.
No,
hey,
no.
Hey Bailey, are you logged into the show or no?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay,
I'm asking for that for a reason
because my computer did its automatic shutdown on me and it's queuing back up and I don't want to run out. I know we got the 90-second warning, so I'll just need you I'll need you to cue the ending music and the oh you know
what
that
do
block
I say?
Call thing.
End episode.
Yeah, but I'll tell you no. First you'll go over to the right. I'll walk you through it when we get there. Trish, we got a little less than a minute. Give some parting thoughts as
okay.
you close out for this evening, Trish.
Okay, just stay hopeful, everybody. Keep fighting because you're definitely worth fighting for. Your life is worth fighting for, what you're going through, what you've been through. I know it's been horrific, but I never thought that I would be where I am today or doing what I am today, and here I am. And I've spoken at the UN, and I speak at universities and law enforcement. So magic is inside you. My son and I got on a topic. I believe very much that when we pass away, we become the stars in the sky. Each and every one of us has
Absolutely.
An iron in us that is
Absolutely.
Only found in stardust.
Absolutely.
So you have that.
Absolutely.
So carry it, let it shine.
Absolutely.
And look me up on Facebook, Butterfly Dreams Alliance.
Absolutely. I'm back
or
in,
Trish
Bailey.
McKnight. So I enjoyed it. Thank you, everybody, Charlie and Bailey and Mary Ellen, and thank you so much for the conversation. It's been fabulous. Thank
you. Appreciate you staying in touch, Smith. Folks, this has been the Stop Child Abuse Now radio show, brought to you by NASCA, the National Adult Association of Survivors of Child Abuse. National Association of Adult Survivors of Child Abuse. My name is Charlie Specker, and as I say every show that I end, I like to say and remind us this. The only adult not responsible for child abuse intervention and prevention is any adult who themselves was never a child. I got it, Bailey.
Another tomorrow, 'cause that dawn was